Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffy Kennedy, author of Epic Fantasy Romance. I'm here with my first cup of coffee. Delicious. Today is Monday, May 13th. I have a lot to talk to you about today. I wrote down a number of notes, kind of catching up on what's going on with my publishing stuff. I have a big meeting today that I am nervous about. And have you all been watching this whole thing about the plagiarism lawsuit against Entangled? I read it's not a deposition. What do you call it? The complaint. I read the complaint so that you don't have to. So we're going to talk about that some. Let's see. Where am I in my life? What is art? Who am I? I've passed 23,000 words on Reluctant Wizard. It's fine. It's better than fine. I should give myself credit where it's due. I did have the highest word count week since before my stepdad died. So maybe that indicates something. And it's like not hugely better, but I mean, that's better than I've done in a while. And so I am slowly ramping up productivity again, feeling a little bit clearer headed. So all of that's great. I have a meeting today at 11 with my wonderful editor at Tor, Ali Fisher, and with her assistant editor, Deanna, and Agent Sarah. And we are going to talk about the book two after Neb of the Roses / Onira 2. And I'm so nervous, you all. Maybe nervous is the wrong word, but I'm keyed up about it. Longtime listeners will know that I suck, to put it plainly, at knowing what a book is going to be before I write it. The whole reason that I don't outline, that I don't pre-plot, is because I cannot. It's not that I don't know how. It's not that no one ever taught me. It's not that I don't get the techniques and all of these kinds of things. I don't know until I write it. And so I kind of start from, people ask me this all the time, where do I start with a story? I start with like character and situation, but usually it's like I have an image of a person and a feel for the character that is this very nebulous, just sort of a sense of the person, really. A lot of times I don't even know what they look like. I just know what it feels like inside their head. So I have a sense of a character and this predicament that they're in. And then I write around that until I figure out what the story is. And I don't know how that's going to fly in an editorial meeting, people. I really just don't know how this is going to go. And I'm worried that they're going to want more detail from me than I can produce. Maybe I am worrying for naught because Allie does know my process. She knows that I'm this kind of writer. So it'll be interesting to see. Who knows? Maybe it'll be fun. Maybe I am like getting too worked up for nothing. I mentioned this to an aspiring writer friend of mine, which I hesitated to mention because it's hard when you're an aspiring writer because this kind of meeting sounds like the best thing ever. But I thought I would share that I was nervous about this meeting. And my friend said that they would literally have a very dramatic surgery. I won't tell you exactly what kind to have a meeting like this. And it's like, yeah, you know, that's why we call them champagne problems, because I can only almost mention this to other authors who are like at my same place, because only they will go, oh, that sucks. Yeah. Instead of saying, I would literally have this radical surgery to have that meeting. And to be fair, there's a time when my younger self would have probably offered some sort of dramatic removal of a body part in order to have this meeting. So why am I so worried about it? You know, part of it is that expectations thing. And younger writers, I see, ask on social media, they ask me sometimes, but you know, like when you have a book like Never the Roses is getting such great reactions. People love this book so much. And so like even the meeting, I mean I can tell you all that like the meeting with for, which the assistant editor put together, and you know, and it's great. I love that she's so enthusiastic, but she called the meeting NTR for Never the Roses and gasps. She put in asterisks, book two chat. And I'm like, what if book two is not gasp worthy? I mean, what if it doesn't have the same impact? Maybe it won't. So, for example, one of my author friends, I'm not going to say who, but that I talked about this to, said, as someone who had two submission passes strictly based on the performance of the print format of a third book in a previous trilogy, I totally get it. This stuff comes back to haunt you for sure. And so I had to write back in all caps, not helping. And she replied, oops, sorry, take a breath, it will be all fine. But it's obviously too late now. So, I guess one thing that I'm worried about is, yeah, what if it's not as good? What if they don't like my idea? What if they say it sucks? Then what do I do? It'll be fine, right? It'll be fine. Deep cleansing breaths. But that's the thing, right? Champagne problem, it's still a problem. And it looks enviable to other people, but it I'm worked up about it. So anyway, that's me. That's my life. I didn't get my blog post finished yesterday. I was kind of worthless yesterday. But I did on Saturday have a I got to interview Susan Cooper, who is our grandmaster for this year. And that was great. It was a terrific interview. And she was the same. She said that she doesn't know what the story is until she writes it too, which made me feel ever so much better. And it was really great to get to talk to her. And you know what's really cool is like interviewing an author like Susan Cooper, who I've been reading since I was a wee young thing. And having her ask me what I think. I mean, when you know, when we were talking about process, she's like, well, don't you find that's true? And I'm like, Susan Cooper is asking me about my writing process. It was awesome. It was awesome. So yeah, champagne problems. I shall not complain, and I shall not worry. Lo, though I walk through the shadow of the valley of doubt. Right. Funny how that Catholicism comes out in moments of crisis. Oh, and I had a very interesting dream. I know I don't normally talk about my dreams, and this one is nebulous, so I'm not sure why I want to tell you all about it, but it feels important. I often have dreams that take place in various structures. And usually I am looking for something within the dream. And this is a standard place that's kind of like a palace on a cliff by the sea. And rambling rooms and lots of hidden stairwells winding down the cliff and caves. And there's lots of people living there and stuff. And I'm very often trying to get down to the sea. I have a like one of my recurring, it's not quite an anxiety dream, but it's like a quasi anxiety dream, is that I am on vacation somewhere with a beach and that like days have gone by and I haven't been able to get to the water yet. I haven't actually gone down. We've been running around doing things, and I'll think I've been here for 5 days and I haven't even gone swimming yet. How's that for like a, I don't know, like a lost opportunity thing? I think I have a lot of dreams about big bodies of water, and I think that's creativity. So this one was salient because I kind of recognized this place and we were hunting for something. I'm always questing for something, and usually with a team of people, and it's very convivial, and I love that. And we were hunting down and we were trying to get to these sea caves and to the water and looking for the thing. And I had this like inspiration. I thought that I needed to go upward instead. I never go upward in these dreams. And I went up and I was climbing up and up. And I found myself at the very top, and it turned out that it was like the top of a pyramid with the four-sided pyramidal shape was crystal. And I walked into this room that was made of crystal, and I was inside the very, very top of this pyramid, and I found the thing that we were looking for. And I thought how I couldn't wait to get back and tell everybody how it was up here that we should have been looking up here. And it left me with such a great feeling. So, any of you amateur dream interpreters, I would love to know what you think. I just know that it felt really good. It made me happy. And so that was a nice thing, right? All right. In the Department of Not So Nice Things, let's talk about this lawsuit. So I saw somebody reference this and I got a link to the Google Doc, but I hadn't seen a whole lot of discussion of this online and so forth. So what happened is Lynn Freeman is an author who signed with an agent who is Emily Sylvan Kim at Prospect Agency. And she had this book, and this was quite a while ago. I could probably find out exactly when. I will link to this Google Doc in case you do want to read it because it is interesting. Here I bragged about having done the research and now I don't know this date. Anyway, she signed with the agent. She had this manuscript. The agent said she loved it and that they were going to go on submission with it and everything was great. And it was this kind of paranormal romance. And they ended up doing 47 revisions of this manuscript. 47. And my author friends out there who have worked with agents on stuff, I heard you gasp, a collective gasp of horror. Sometimes we go back and forth a lot. 47 times is beyond the realm. I mean, this is like, this is not a, the book is not working. But she ended up like doing all these notes for subsequent books. She planned out like four books, not like me, right? And, you know, she had all these notes and all of these things. And meanwhile, the agent also had a client named Tracy Deebs. Who writes as Tracy Wolf. And apparently they were very good friends as well, which happens. And so I'm going to give a slight caveat here that, you know, agents do their best to treat all of their clients equally. Some are better at this than others. So, I mean, you know, like Agent Sarah is always very careful to say, you know, I love all my clients, all my lovely clients. You know, she really works very hard at being even-handed. But I know author friends who have left agents because, like, the agent was always on social media riffing with a couple of her other clients and not paying attention to, you know, there was clear favoritism. And it can be a difficult thing when an agent has multiple clients and writing similar things that they can only hit up the same editor so many times, right? And so sometimes there's a sense that, and I really think that Sarah does not do this, but I do know of other agents who do it, who like, they won't submit to a particular editor that the author wants because they're saving that editor for one of their other clients. And maybe it's a business decision, but sometimes it's favoritism. So anyway, back to this lawsuit. What happened was, is that Tracy Wolf sold a series of books, beginning with the book Crave, to Liz Pelletier at Entangled. And Liz is rather well known, very open about the fact that she takes a very editorial hand with some of her clients, to the point of, you know, like giving them plot points and saying, do this. So Tracy's agent, Emily, it's Emily, right? Make sure I get my names right. Yes. Sold Tracy's series to Entangled. And Lynn Freeman is contending that they ripped off her story. And they went through this Google Doc is fascinating because it's very difficult to prove plagiarism, especially when it's, if there's not exact text copied and it's story ideas, because usually these kinds of cases get thrown out because it's like tropes are non-copyrightable. It's not that I stole your book idea. It's that I am also writing the same kind of trope. You can't copyright a happily ever after. You can't copyright, you know, like, oh, I had a secret pregnancy in my book and you have a secret pregnancy in your book, therefore you copied me. That kind of thing doesn't fly. But so they really worked hard at putting together this complaint because it's obviously expensive to do. So the books in the series that Entangled published are Crave, Crush, Covet, and Court. And Freeman read all of these books after being put off for years and years and years on her own book, and found that they are incredibly similar. Like 7 character names are exactly the same. And there are all kinds of very specific details that are the same. And so it is kind of fascinating to go through because they have so many points that are parallel. Like both books, the heroine is from San Diego. Both take place in Alaska. When Tracy Wolf was asked why she said it in Alaska, she said because Liz Pelletier told her to. It was like, really? That was okay. Freeman set the book in her book in Alaska because that's where she lives. And so there are, I mean, they go through the alphabet. We've gone through the alphabet once. We are down to multiple letters. Like there's even this weird thing where there are a strange appearance of vampires that are dressed as 80s rockers that attack. And it's the same in both books. It's like, why keep that kind of detail? And they go into text that appears to be very, very close. So, they have said, and it might have been in the attendant articles, that Liz Pelletier, I think, or somebody thought that Tracy Wolf's voice was better suited to the story. She has a much crisper, more like saucy urban fantasy type voice, and the books have done well. Did the agent and author and possibly editor all decide to take Lynn Freeman's story and have Tracy write it? Oops. Didn't silence my phone, but that was potential spam anyway. So anyway, I will link to this, and I'm really interested to see what happens because, wow, that's blatant. If that's what happened, that's going to be a big deal. So on that note, wish me well on my meeting today, and I will talk to you all on Friday. You all take care. Bye-bye.